Hi, I'm Rick, and welcome to Reflections, your bi-weekly, or thereabout, podcast of highly personal and quite often pretty scary stories. In each Reflections episode, we are going to bring you three different speakers, three storytellers who are going to share tales like surviving full-body paralysis, which, by the way, just happens to be our number two speaker. But you're going to have to wait for that one, because our first storyteller today is Autumn Carolyn. When I recorded Autumn's story, I found myself not thinking of the YouTuber, the podcast, or anything else. I was so engrossed in her story. I was so waiting with bated breath for the outcome. And I think you're going to enjoy this one.
Hello, my name is Autumn Carolyn. I am living in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I am a previous flight attendant and a travel photographer. I wanted to talk to you about a story today that I had when I was flying with the airlines. And it started off when I was out on the line for about a year, and I was doing my monthly checkups, checking for any lumps in the shower, and I found a lump on my right breast. And at that time, I was 24. I had never had anything like this before, and it was very scary for me because I have a really big fear of medical, all things medical. It just scares me. But if you put me in turbulence, I'm your girl. I can handle it. So what happened was that I went to my doctor and I got a breast checkup, and they told me that I was going to need a biopsy. I had never had a biopsy before, but I knew that it included needles, and I was very, very terrified of this. Not to mention terrified of the thought of even having breast cancer at 24. So when I went through, I was trying to think of ways to keep my mind off of the biopsy. And the only thing that I could think of in the moment was that I really wanted to fly somewhere. As I was waiting for the results, I wanted to go somewhere because I just didn't want to be sitting around and waiting. And because I didn't know what the predicament was from my biopsy, I wanted to make sure that if it was cancer, that I was doing what I could to see the world while I could. I wasn't sure. And so what I did was I went in for the biopsy. I got it done. And within like 2 days, I took off on a flight to Australia for 2 weeks. And one of the cool perks about being a flight attendant is that you can actually fly for free to different places, but you would only have to pay international fees. So altogether, I had to pay $120 round trip for my flight from Minneapolis to Sydney, Australia. When I came to Australia, I was still very nervous because I didn't know what the biopsy results would be. I was working with my dorm mates because we were playing a card game, and they could tell something was off with me because I was really nervous, and I kept on trying to brush it off and say, oh, no, they can't tell. But the more that I kept on thinking about the biopsy and the results, the more that it just was clouding my mind. And I figured, you know what? I think I should just say something because there's no, I shouldn't be ashamed or I shouldn't be scared to tell someone this. So when I was sitting in the group of people and we're playing the card game, I let them know that I was waiting on a diagnosis any minute. I didn't know when it would be coming, but that if I'm acting like I'm nervous, that is the reason why. And would you believe it? But as soon as I finished that conversation, 20 minutes later, I get a call from my doctor as we're still playing this game. And my doctor calls, I go into the other room, and he had the results already. And he told me that it was benign and that I didn't have cancer. And I just broke down crying because I had been so scared. And I walked in, and obviously everyone was silent because they knew why I had left. And then when I walked back in, I just started shaking and I said, I don't have cancer and it's benign. And it was just like the most magical moment because all these strangers at this one point in time came together and they were clapping and so happy. And they like cheers. And one of the gentlemen there, he was from England, and he said, are you going to be doing anything in regards to celebrating this? And I didn't even think about that. I was just thinking, you know, I don't have it. I'm like so thankful that I don't, but I'm also, my heart goes out for those who have had that phone call and who haven't received the news that I received. And that was something that really kind of shook me. So I held a lot of empathy. And so that wasn't really even in my mind. And then one of the other girls who was from Denmark, she said, well, you should, have you been to New Zealand? Are you planning on going to New Zealand? And I thought, that's not even, I wasn't even thinking that. I was just planning on going to Australia because I had booked these tickets so last minute. And I said, you know what? I think I do want to try to go to New Zealand. And I turned around, I walked out, I went downstairs to the hostel area where they had free Wi-Fi. You could go on their computer desk and you can type in everything. It was a lot different. I was able to talk to my hostel. I got a full refund. I was able to make tickets or purchase tickets for New Zealand for the very next day. And I was able to also find a hostel the very next day that I could stay in New Zealand for a few days. And this was one of the most spontaneous decisions I have ever made. I already was going to Australia by myself. I had never been to a different continent that was down under. I'd never been there before, so that was already a challenge. And then all of a sudden going and saying, hey, why don't we just go to New Zealand? I don't even know what I'm doing, but I'm doing this anyway. And so I booked it and I walked back in, and the hostel had also given me a free bottle of champagne. And I walked back in and we split it up between everybody. And I told everyone I'm going to New Zealand. And the next day I flew by myself. I went black water rafting in the glowworm caves. And I went to Hobbiton and I did a bunch of other amazing things. And I really think about this moment a lot, actually, because when there are times that I'm either going through, you know, if I'm depressed for a certain reason, or if there's something that's, you know, really sad that I'm going through, I have to stop and remind myself that I shouldn't just be sitting at home and waiting for something good to happen. Sometimes I need to push myself to do something, even if it's something small or something big, like flying to a different country very randomly. But I think that that would probably be one of my most special moments and defining moments in my life. And I just really wanted to share that with you. I just wrote a book. It's called Traveling in Wonder. And this is one of the stories that I tell in my book. If you are interested in hearing about other stories, you can go to www.autumncarolyn, and that's with two N's, .com. And that's how you can get a hold of my book. It'll be launching February 24th of this year.
Additional information about Autumn and her book, Traveling in Wonder, is available at autumncarolyn.com. The links are in the show notes and the video description below. Now, before we get into our next storyteller, I want to remind you that you don't have to just listen to us. You can read us as well. Yepper, we have a newsletter. Now, I'll fill you in on all the details a little bit later of our massive media empire. Okay, well, maybe it's not quite massive yet, and it's certainly not an empire, but we do have a newsletter that's filled with stories and motivation and inspirational topics of like-minded, open-minded thinkers. So just head on over to rickhiggins.com, and don't worry, that link is in the show notes or the video description somewhere. And to be even more helpful, you don't have to look for the link once you're on the website. A pop-up's going to help you find your way to the newsletter. On to our second storyteller. Now, this episode, we're going to do things a little bit differently. Instead of bringing you somebody from the outside world to speak to you, it's me again. I know, you're probably tired of listening to my voice by now, but trust me, you're going to like this. Well, you're not going to like the story, but I think you're going to be very interested in it. It's the two times that I had full body paralysis and how I actually managed to come out the other end walking. Twice in my life, I was stricken with something that, well, nobody should be stricken with. I had full body paralysis. Now, this wasn't because of a physical injury. It was because of an autoimmune disease called Guillain-Barré syndrome. Basically, your body does what it's supposed to do. It attacks what it's supposed to attack. But when its job is done, it doesn't stop. And it looks for things to destroy. And in my case, it was the sheathing around my nerves. Now, the second time that I had this, I was sitting at work and I could feel it instantly what was happening. Like I said, I had had this before. I knew the feeling. It starts progressively at the ends of your toes and at the ends of your fingers, and it works its way towards the core of your body. As your nerves become less and less able to send communication, well, it can't send communication back down to tell your muscles to work. And you know, it says, hey, lift up your leg, and your leg doesn't hear it. And it takes about a day and a half before you can't do anything. I left work, I went home, we went to the hospital, and by the end of that night, I tried to stand up and I fell on the floor. It was the last time that I walked for 6 months. Now, the horror part of this story is that I am one of those stubborn individuals who does not ask for help. I do not accept help very well. I don't accept compliments. I'm just stoic, I guess. Well, when you have a full body paralysis, you can't do any of those things. You are reliant on everybody for everything, for your feeding, for your care, for taking care of your number one and your number two. And that was extremely, extremely difficult for me. The weeks that I spent in the hospital, you're at everyone's mercy, and the nurses, they're all working so hard. And what I tried to do the entire time was just be upbeat and friendly. Now, in the back of my mind, I wasn't. You know, at 4:30 in the morning when I'm laying there like a slab of meat in the bed, I naturally started crying. I was naturally upset. But when the hospital started coming back to life, when there were people around me, I made it a point to be good for them, to be good for me, to keep a positive attitude. We were pretty sure that in just a matter of time, a year, that I would be back on the road to recovery. But it was an extremely difficult time for me, learning how to trust others, learning how to be reliant on other people. But I didn't quite learn it then. Skip to when I was released from the hospital. They brought me back home. They put me in bed. And there I was supposed to start gaining my strength, wait for the physical therapist to come by and tell me how to do all of this. Well, I got it in my stubborn little head that I didn't need him. So he came, he evaluated me, he said, okay, in a few weeks I'll come back and we'll begin the work of rebuilding. Well, I said, no, in my head, I'm going to do it myself. And so I forced myself 12 hours a day to get up and to move. And by that I meant, you know, I started with a walker, then I went to crutches, and then I went to a cane. I would have my then wife take me out to the shopping mall, and I would just walk back and forward trying to gain the strength in order to show this therapist that I didn't need him. And sure enough, a few weeks later when he came back, it was I who stood up from the sofa, walked to the door, and met him. He's like, naturally, I guess you don't need me. You know, good luck with your recovery. Have a nice life. As soon as I shut the door and turned around, I fell on the floor. I was my own worst enemy. But without a physical therapist, I still needed to make progress. So long story short, I basically tore up the entire backyard, rebuilt fences, rebuilt everything. Just hours and hours and hours every day, slowly. But the whole point was to move every part of my body until I could learn to walk again. So what did I learn from this whole experience, other than the fact that, well, I'm an idiot and I'm stubborn? Well, I did learn how to trust other people. I did learn how to, a little bit, ask for help from others. I learned that I'm not necessarily alone in this. But the biggest thing I learned was the attitude that I had in the hospital. I learned that I can face something difficult and I could get through it. For twice in my life, I have literally been unable to move or to do anything for myself. And that is a challenge not many people face. Not many people know if they could face something that catastrophic and actually make it out the other side. Well, I know. I did it. I did it with energy. I did it with joy. I did it with encouragement. And I made it out. And now I know that pretty much anything life throws at me, I have the ability to do that again. Do I wish that on anybody? No, there's got to be better ways of learning that lesson. But for me, for my kind of personality, it was a hard lesson to learn, but one I'm glad I did. Now, before we get into our next storyteller's tale, I want to remind you that the Reflections podcast is part of a much bigger thing. We're a YouTube channel. We are, well, go to rickhiggins.com and just kind of see what we are all about. The idea is to inspire others to take control of their own lives, to define what their own lives are going to be. On the YouTube channel and a lot of the other outlets, it is us showing you how we're trying to do it, how we fall on our face sometimes, but how we pick ourselves up and are still trying to find the right answers for us. And then you have the Reflections podcast here, which is stories of other people, well, doing the exact same thing. But enough of the self-promotion. Let's get back to the stories. Our next speaker is Maureen Scanlon. Her story kind of got to me. About halfway through, I kept envisioning myself as part of her story, like I was somehow living her life and my life all at the same time. It is a very scary, a very personal, but yet somehow still compelling tale.
Hello, Rick. Hello, Reflections listeners. I'm so happy that you're here, and I'm so honored to be here to share sort of a story that I think a lot of us can relate to. My name is Maureen Scanlon. I am a master life coach, an award-winning author, a professional speaker, and also a podcast host. My premise, really, of everything that I do, all of my businesses, is to teach people that you're allowed to choose and create the life that you want. And I want you to have the best life that you deserve. And I think it took me so long, half my life, to learn that. So I'm going to start off telling you my story of trauma and domestic violence. I grew up in a household where there was a lot of codependence. And what I had learned from that upbringing was I had to earn love. And when I say I had to earn love, it was in the way that if I did something for someone, then they would love me. And if I pleased someone, then they would love me. So fast forward, I'm a young mother of two daughters. They were 2 and 4 at the time. I had been married to a man who I met in high school. We got married right away. I was 3 months pregnant with my oldest daughter. Yeah, none of that is good. Of course, that's right there. We already know that's a recipe for disaster or the perfect storm. And it was definitely a perfect storm. So he had an alcohol addiction. You know, I kind of did the, if I can't beat him, join him thing. I tried the threatening, I'll ulterior motive, like, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. None of it really worked. And I really adjusted my beliefs in my life to just completely making sure he was okay. He's late. I would work night shift. I was a nurse. And he would come home and need to watch the kids so I could then go do my shift, graveyard shift. And he wasn't coming home, and I called police stations and hospitals and just worried sick something happened and I needed to get to work. And he walks in the door, and of course I do the one thing that's probably the most unintelligent thing to do. I attack him with my words. Where have you been? You're so inconsiderate. I'm tired of you drinking all the time. And the next thing I know, I'm on the floor, on my back, with his hand around my throat. And I just remember that feeling. If you remember TV back in the day, I'm definitely aging myself. I'm over 50, nifty 50 here. But they used to close off programs and it would just fade into this circle. And that's what I saw. I saw literally just everything was closing in. And I knew I was just moments away from death. And all I could think about was my girls in the other room are going to find their mom dead. And with superhuman strength, I get my legs up, get him on his shoulders and push him off. And I sat up and that first breath hurt my lungs. I was that close to dying. Now, what you want to hear me say right now is, It was then that I packed up, took my kids and left. But that didn't happen. And I know in domestic violence arenas, everybody who's not been in this situation will say, why didn't you leave? There's so much more to domestic violence than just physically packing up and leaving. There's financial abuse, there's psychological abuse, emotional abuse, all of it. When you don't think you're worthy of love, you take what you can get. And that's what I did. I took what I could get. He would get drunk, and there's such a thing as blackout drunk. And this is not that he had to drink 5 cases of beer to pass out. This was drinking any alcohol changed who he was, and it changed it to rage. And whether it was related to his upbringing or what he saw really is a moot point, because he never remembered doing it. And so I always felt bad the next day. The I'm sorry's, I'll never do it again. And it didn't stop there. It just continued. And I wasn't at a place of loving myself enough, excuse me, to decide to get out. And I also had no support. I had no family support. I had no friends, because he had isolated me from all of that, which is very common in abusive situations. So I continued finally finding out that he was unfaithful. And that was my line in the sand. Now, everyone can say, your line in the sand was that he cheated on you, not that he almost strangled you to death. Yep, you're right. Interestingly enough, if I would have left when he was physically abusive to me, then I would be shamed. I would feel the shame and I would feel judged. By him being unfaithful and cheating on me, I felt safer, because then he would be shamed and he would be blamed. And it's interesting how our minds psychologically work that way. So I ended up I did get pregnant. Fast forward, had my son. And then he was unfaithful, and we went through AA, Al-Anon, the whole thing. And he did this while we were doing that. And I just remember thinking, I stuck by you for all of this, and then you cheat on me? That's just unbelievable. So I left him, and I repeated these relationships. I just got the same man, just a different face. Some were just psychologically abusive, some were just emotionally abusive, but nonetheless, I kept repeating that cycle. And why? Because I didn't love myself. I did not see that I was worthy of being loved. After the last long-term relationship, when I finally decided, and I'm going to use this word a lot, listeners, decided, because we think, I can't make a decision because this person's doing this, or my situation is this, or I don't have money. But I'm going to talk about how much deciding and making a choice can change for you. So when I got out of the last dysfunctional abusive relationship, I was alone for the first time in my life since I was 18 years old. Yeah, first time. I just thought I had to have a partner to be worthy. My entire family, there was no divorce, there were no single people. So, you know, you're only valuable if you're in a partnership. And so I remember sitting on my bed, deciding, what's the common denominator in all this? Me. It was me. I started journaling and sort of doing all that inner work, like figuring out, what is wrong with me? Why do I keep doing this? While I'm sitting on the bed, I had 2 dogs at the time. One was an Australian Shepherd named Brody, and one is a chunky little Chihuahua named Jade. And it was my epiphany moment. Jade's licking my tears, and Brody's laying by my side. And it was at that time that I looked at them and I thought, that's it. I don't love myself unconditionally the way they love me. I'm looking at my dogs and they're just like, you're my whole world, Mom. Why are you crying? We don't want you to be sad. And that was my moment to say, I gotta love me. I've gotta love me the way my dogs love me. So from there, everything changed. I decided that I would love me. I decided to see what was good in me and not what was wrong with me. I decided to do something different. And the dogs were everything to me. They really established where the trajectory of my life would go from there. I remember going out on a date, and rather than going out like I used to and being like, maybe this is my next man, maybe this is my next husband, maybe this is the next love of my life, I didn't do that. I went out there thinking, hey, you don't realize I'm the best thing since sliced bread. And tonight, all I'm expecting is a good meal and some conversation. And man, that changed everything. Because then I was able to attract someone that now my husband, I'm very, very happily married. I was able to attract someone who was more aligned with who I was without having to lose myself. So to wrap it up, I really, really think the most important thing we can do in this life is to have positive self-talk and self-thoughts. In my books that I've written, one of the things that I write about is a chapter called Quit Calling Me Names. And this was a big factor for me, was I was so critical growing up in a household where there was a lot of criticism and negative thinking. I would cut myself down, and then I believed all of those things I was saying about myself. So there's something in psychology called the labeling theory, and it's how your identity and behavior are influenced by the terms you use to describe yourself. So make sure that you're doing self-care, that you're talking positively to yourself, affirming all the good things about you. Go out there and be brave. Observe the world, try new things, jump off that cliff, go skydiving. Do things that build that confidence and that belief in you, and be expectant that instead of bad things always happen to me, they come in threes, or this is the lot in life I was given. Instead, you go out there expecting that good things will happen to you. So in the words of Glinda the Good Witch from The Wizard of Oz, she says, you always had it in you. You just had to find it. And that's what happened to me at 45 years old. It took me finally finding what was in there all along. So thank you.
Maureen is a certified life coach, podcaster, and award-winning author. Her website, also listed in the show notes in the video description below, is lifecoachmaureen.com. So are you enjoying the stories? Would you like to tell one of your own? Just go to rickhiggins.com, or even just send me an email at rick@rickhiggins.com and share what story you would like to tell. We'll get together. I'll point you in the right directions for all the helpful technical hints to how to make it happen. And we can get your inspirational message in front of other people. And in case I'm mumbling my words, just simply go to the show notes or the video description wherever you are watching or listening to this podcast, and you will find how to spell rickhiggins.com. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, unless, of course, you're listening to this somehow after the fact of when we released it, and now you've got a whole lot of other episodes to binge listen, and you probably should go do that. But in any case, whatever time zone you are in, thanks again for listening.